noon here on WEEI. It's Jones and Keith. It's Patriots Friday. Talk to Dietrich Wise in the 10 o'clock hour. We'll be talking to Patriots Special Teams Coordinator Jeremy Springer at some point today. We have This Week in Review at 12:45. Keith's Keys at 1 o'clock sharp. So a lot of Patriots talk on the show today. We'll get back into Patriots and Niners. All your thoughts, predictions, feelings. Can the Patriots keep it close? Last stand for Jacoby Brissett, et cetera, et cetera. But we talked a decent amount of Red Sox yesterday on the show. Officially eliminated from the postseason. Was this year a success? Was it not a success? For more on that, we're joined by our Red Sox insider, Lou Maloney. He's brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market. How are we doing this week, Lou?
We're doing good. Well, I'm playing golf Monday morning and Tuesday morning.
Nice.
Oh, you're like the Red Sox.
Yep, exactly.
Nice.
Yep. So I got my week planned. It's going to be a nice one.
Good. But we asked yesterday, and I guess there's an inverse to this question as well, but would you consider this season for the Red Sox a success?
I think big picture, no. You know what I mean? Because you just see the Boston Red Sox, and you should be in the playoffs every single year. And that should be the expectation. What, 3 years in a row? It's the first time in 30 years you haven't made the postseason. So, no, I mean, that's not a success. You know, that's a disappointment. So then you kind of get over, but the disappointment was the offseason, right? So then you walk into spring training, and you look at this group, and Giolito goes down, and Whitlock goes down, and Story goes down week one, and then Casas goes down 2 weeks later. And I remember like the third week of April thinking this is going to be a disaster. But young guys stepped up. So like from that point on, based on your expectations, there were a lot of good things. There were some building blocks. There was, you know, your three starters kind of gave you 30 starts and kind of got through it and gave you a foundation year. So there were some good things, you know. I think that's why people would say it's a positive. And I've said that in the past. That's only because your expectations of what they did not do in the offseason to make this team better.
What are the chances they're going to be aggressive in trying to improve the starting pitching? And by aggressive, obviously, I mean spend big money on a starting pitcher.
Well, it's either big money or big assets, meaning a trade. You know, I mean, if you go out there and make a big trade for a guy like Gilbert, who's making $1 million a year, you know, but you gave up some serious assets, or Kirby or Crochet, these guys that are like, you know, pre-arbitration. Actually, Crochet's arbitration, but... You know, so that depends. You know, I don't see them in Corbin Burns. Max Fried is a different story, but I do think it's going to come through a trade.
Why go that route? Like, I get it. They're very left-handed. You know, they have a number of either young positional players or positional prospects, and again, they skew left-handed. So I get the organizational logjam, but why not just spend in free agency as opposed to giving up actual talented players or prospects that could help your big league club? Like, you could add Corbin Burns mm-hmm. without subtracting. The more I think about that, the more frustrated I get that sounds like it's the approach.
Yeah, and you could. It's just that, you know, you've got these four guys in AAA that there's, you know, no room for. You know what I mean? Like, where do you put Marcelo Meyer? You know, Story is here. He's healthy. I don't know. So Meyer's insurance. Hopefully he can get through a year. So you can go up and down it. And you could say, well, you make room for Roman Anthony, but okay, then why are you going to hold on to Willie Abreu? So you can go a few different avenues. You know, you can trade for a big right-handed bat and sign Corbin Burns. But I don't see them just going out and spending for Burns and going out and spending for, you know, Teoscar Hernandez or Bregman or Adames and keeping all of these assets. You know, because part of the whole thing, too, maybe it's an older philosophy because everybody gets hurt, but it's like if I can, you know, trade for a controllable starter – you know, that's 25 years old, that's 3 years left of arbitration, maybe extend him. I feel better about that than giving an 8-9 year deal to a 30-year-old Corbin Burns. So maybe it's just a philosophy.
How many of the big four prospects do you think could be on the opening day roster?
Hopefully none. And I say that because, you know, let's just say you put Roman Anthony, your big league right fielder, and Christian Campbell as your second baseman. What if they turn into Jackson Holliday? And they're hitting a buck, you know, in the middle of May, and you're actually trying to win this year, and you got to send them down. Who's your second baseman? Who's your right fielder? To me, put a roster together with none of them on the opening day. So that way they're down in AAA. When the inevitable injury does happen, your season doesn't collapse. Or he's just so damn good that we got to find room for him. You know what I mean? And you make a move. But, you know... I think when you see 162 and you go through these years, you're there every day. Like, depth is everything. And if you don't have it, you are done. I don't care who you are.
Do you think Trevor Story is the kind of guy who would start the year at short and then move to second for Marcelo Mayer, or would he scoff at that?
I think Alex Cora and everybody else would scoff at that because Marcelo Mayer is nowhere near the shortstop that Story is defensively. You know, like if I want to get his bat in, if I want to get him in this lineup, it's like, you know, I'm not taking Trevor Story off shortstop to put a kid there that's not as good. You know, I mean, you saw the way the defense was this year. If you have Story at short and Rafaela in center and Duran in left, you have really good defensive, you know, left side there and up the middle. So defensively, it's not even close, you know, and I'm not sure it is yet offensively. I think he will be a better player. There's no Marcel's going to be a really good player, but defensively, he's not moving Story off short if he's healthy.
Talking to Lou Maloney, our Red Sox insider here on Jones and Keefe on WEEI, not to keep harping on this, but to circle back to the idea of trading guys off the roster versus signing someone, and you can certainly do both. If depth is everything, in your words, why again are they trading all these guys out of their organization? Like why are you trading all these pieces away? They should just go out and spend the money, which I think a lot of us are frustrated with the lack of spending the way they used to. It's not like they don't spend compared to Tampa, but they don't spend the way they used to. So if depth is everything, keep your depth and go sign guys.
Yeah, I wonder like what order this is going to go into, right? Because like remember like Dombrowski would be like, I need a starter, and I need an ace and a closer. And like first week it was like Price and Kimbrel.
Yeah, boom, done. Like, okay, right. Yeah.
Right? Yep. So is it, let's dive into free agency, you know, which slows the trade market because, you know, maybe we do go after Burns and Fried, which, by the way, I'm all for. Like, I'm all for getting both of them. And then it's like, okay, well, that's not that bad. That's a reasonable deal. We feel comfortable. We got the player. We're good. Now let's look at free agent bats. And if you lose out on a bat or you lose out on an arm, now you've got the flexibility to dive into, like, a trade market, right? So I'm curious, like, do you dive into a trade right away? Or do you just sort of feel out the free agent market with pitching and hitting and see if you're in a ballpark, see if you can sign some of these guys, and then find out what hole you need to fill through trade? So, by the way, I'm fine with it. A lot of money's coming off the books. They're way under last year.
Right.
They're losing their entire back end of that bullpen. You know, that's, what, $26, $27 million. They're already under. Pavetta's going to be off. O'Neill's going to be off. So, I mean, there's plenty of money to spend on two big-time free agents. And like you said, keep the depth.
Now, obviously, they had a ton of guys start games for them this year in the rotation because of injury, so you always need more than you think. But obviously, Tanner Houck established himself this year as a guy you can rely on. I assume you can pencil in Cutter Crawford for next year. And then, like, so how many of these guys are sort of locks for next year's rotation?
I'd say Bayo, Houck, Crawford, and they're going to give Giolito every opportunity to kind of be that fifth, right? And and if he's, you know, who knows? His career's been up and down, right? I mean, if he gives you 30 starts in that fifth spot, you'll take it. So there's one glaring hole, you know, because I don't see Pavetta coming back. There's one glaring hole, and that glaring hole is either a Burns, Max Fried, or trade Seattle, Chicago, wherever it may be, Miami, I don't know. So I think you need one guy in that rotation, you know, and then, and this is something that behind the scenes, you know, like not in the big leagues, that Breslow has done with the Richard Fitzes of the world, with the Quinn Priesters of the world, with the Sandlins, you know, like double-A, triple-A arms to try to build some kind of depth. And I'd imagine Chris Wells in that category next year in Worcester, that you have four starters down in triple-A that you're like, okay, you can come up and do what Fitz just did for four starts. You know, then maybe you option him back down. You know what I mean? So that's the flexibility. That's the depth you need.
You know, and when they signed Kenley Jansen, they got a all-star caliber closer for 2 years, veteran guy, a million career saves, but it was on teams that didn't even make the playoffs. So now going forward, do you think they go that route again, established veteran closer, or do you try to find a kid that can do it and you know, a cheaper guy maybe throws 100 miles an hour or something like that?
Yeah, that's where I'd like to see them really dive in and get, like, you know, like you said, an established one. You did it with Kenley, you did it with Martin, and you were rewarded by it. They were exactly what they were, you know what I mean? And this year, a little up and down injuries, whatever, but for the most part, they were exactly what you bought. So, you know, you got Liam Hendricks coming back, don't rely on him. You got Whitlock coming back, don't rely on him. Go out and get a Tanner Scott, you know, a lefty closer, you know, who can pitch the ninth in case Hendricks has a little hiccup or Whitlock's not the same. You've got Slayton. So they got to rebuild the back end of that. But you're right. I want, like, an established adult, because there's been so many times when Kenley has come in the last 2 years and it's got a little hairy and he gets out of it. And I'm like, that's the difference. Like, that's a veteran reliever, that closer that's done it 400 and whatever, 47 times, compared to the youth that we had for the 2 years previous that you were just like, you could just see it coming. You could just see the meltdown coming in Yankee Stadium or wherever late.
We've talked about Tristan Casas the last couple of weeks with you, and maybe this question ties into that. What do you do with Devers long-term? Like, is he a third baseman? Is he a Red Sox long-term? Like, what's the plan with Rafael Devers?
Well, first off, I think he's a Red Sox, you know, long-term. And I think where he plays depends on what they do with Casas. You know, to your point, everybody is talking about Casas, trading him, and I've mentioned it before. I think everything is on the table. But if you don't have to, and you can keep Casas and Devers and go get a right-handed bat to hit between them, you might be better off. The problem is like, what can you get for him? Like, for the type of arm that we're talking about, and you could go get, you know, just pay for it, you know, but if it's a trade, his name will come up. So I think Devers is your third baseman. And they got to, you know, if DeCostas is here, if not, I think he moves to first right away. But they got to figure out how to keep this guy healthy. You know, I mean, he was having a career year up until what happened in Colorado in the last month and a half. He's just a shell of himself.
Do you think, you detailed this earlier, they've missed the playoffs 3 years in a row, first time since 10 to 12. They haven't had a longer stretch in 30 years missing the postseason. That's at stake next year. Do you think it bothers them? Because a lot of, and I'm not talking about the players, I'm not talking about even Alex Cora, I'm talking about higher than that, organizationally, you know, ownership, Sam Kennedy. Does it bother them that they've missed the playoffs 3 years in a row? Because outside looking in, it doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, I know. I hope so. Right? I mean, that's like the correct answer. They say it, you know, and I hear Sam talk about it all the time, and Tom, and we don't really hear John that much, but they say it, but I really hope that it gets to them, you know, and that's why I hope that, you know, this offseason, we've been hearing a lot about you got to build through the minor leagues, and this is like going to be a rebuild. I mean, they don't really say it, but we all know it. And well, they have. They have built through the minor leagues. I mean, you've got 6 or 7 or 8 or 12, like, under, you know, arbitration years, first and second year players. You got the best player in the minor leagues. You got the minor league player of the year. You get two other top 25 prospects. Like, you're there. So now it's time. This is almost like the time when Dave Dombrowski walks into an organization and next year you're in the World Series, because he looks at your team and go, what do you guys do? Why are you guys waiting for? Like, what are we waiting for? Let's go sign this guy, make this one trade, and let's go. You know, and that's kind of like the area that they're in right now. That's why I think it could be a very important offseason.
Red Sox paid for Chris Sale to win the Cy Young in the National League this year. And, like, you know, Jones and I we actually feel the same way. Like, we wouldn't have expected 30 starts and an unbelievable season here in Boston. So I'm not freaking out about that. But when you look at the specifics of the trade, you're paying for so much of his deal, and you got Vaughn Grissom in return, who maybe turns into a really nice player, but this year was basically a lost year for him. So how frustrated should Sox fans be allowed to be about the Chris Sale deal?
Well, they should be frustrated with the return for now, right? Because, like I said, I mean, if Grissom was hitting 285 with 16, 18 homers and looked like your second baseman of the future, you could stomach that. You could say, oh, all right, you know, good for Chris. Nobody saw this coming. But, you know, Sale is like, it's interesting because remember that rumor or that story that the Rangers wanted to trade for Sale like a year and a half ago? Like, that when that became public, everybody wanted Bloom fired for not trading him. And I think at the time when they traded him, a lot of people were like, whatever, I'm tired. Well, actually, when he was still in the Red Sox, nobody believed in Sale, like in the offseason, that he was going to just get hurt, that they should just move on. And the minute they traded him, all of a sudden it became, how can you do that? Like, why would you ever do that? And now he's won a Cy Young. So it's kind of revisionist history. You know, I mean, for the most part, most of the Red Sox fans I talk to, like that I've in the past, don't believe in him, didn't trust him, didn't think he would get through 15 starts, thought he'd always be hurt, and if you could move on and get something, do it. The problem is Vaughn Grissom. We don't know what he is, and we still don't know what he is.
Okay, he is Lou Merlone, our Red Sox insider, joining us here on Jones and Keefe. Lou, we appreciate the time. Good luck on the golf course, and we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, boys. Have a great weekend.
All right, thanks, Lou.
All right, Lou Merlone, joining us here, brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market. I should point out, we asked Lou about Joe Castiglione's final broadcast last week. We were talking about that.
Yeah.
Here on WEEI on Sunday, and I think various innings are going to be simulcast on NESN as well. Our farewell to Joe Castiglione.
It's going to be a who's who on Sunday. Yeah. Dropping by as well. There's going to be a ton of former Red Sox in attendance. And again, Joe's been doing the games for 42 years. So
I heard Greg say this earlier today. Greg's like, it was basically my, the only person I really remember doing Red Sox games. I'm like, it is. The only person in our lifetime.
In our lifetime.
Is it.
So basically, playing at a pop-up.
So any player you and I can think of having watched or listened to or anything, like Joe did their game. So when you see the list of people that are involved, it's like, guys from the teams in like the 80s, 90s, 2000s, like last year, it's everything. So, that'll be Sunday, so that'll be pretty cool.
They should bring back
Braves last half of the second inning.
they should bring back everyone he broadcasts with over the years. You know, Troop,
Rich Keefe.
That's what I was segueing to. We could get Rich Keefe in the booth there for.
One of the memorable ones that Joe had. In the
He's
booth.
I mean, you know, I worked so for a long time, very memorable in 2004. But those two games with Keefe,
he'll spend a night in jail for sure.
One game with Keefe,
I did it. I think it was an Orioles game with. Yeah, I did an Orioles game with Joe, and then I did a Tigers game with Will.
Nice.
So, yeah. So, the other, one of the days I was in for Joe.
And as far as we know, it's an open vacancy going forward. So, Jones and Keefe available to call Red Sox games.
They've already heard my tape. My tape is just mixed in with the old Red Sox tapes.
You're a big league broadcaster.
Correct.
You are a multi-game big league broadcaster.
How many guys do you know have done color commentating for a NBA and an MLB game?
I can't imagine there's many.
I don't think it's a ton of overlap.
I wouldn't think. So there you go. That's Lou Merlone. If you missed any of that, Odyssey app, AUDACY, get it on your phone. You can also view it on YouTube. It'll be up shortly. Just subscribe to WEEI. Billy Lanny with all the latest here in trending. And when we come back, let's get back into Patriots and Niners this weekend. You giving the Pats a shot? Neither of us are, but we'll explain why next.
How has Jake
really good. Yeah, no, he's continuing to grow. I think the game experience the other night will help him, you know, moving forward. But, you know, the plan's in place, and I think we're sitting to see him starting to grow on the practice field as well.
Alex Van Pelt discussing hopefully the future QB1 of the Patriots, Drake May.
The near future.
Hopefully next week.
Yeah.
I genuinely think it's going to happen.
So do I. I've worked myself into a position where I'll be surprised if it isn't.
Me too.
Now, the game on Sunday could determine it. Like, Monday morning, I think we'll feel one way stronger or not. But, yeah, like, the only real scenario I see is they win and Brissett plays well. Like, well is on a curve.
I would just stop at win. If they win, I think Brissett keeps the job no matter what.
So if they lose, is there any chance he keeps the job with a loss?
He throws for 300 yards and three touchdowns.
No, I don't think. But if they do that, like, doesn't he win? I mean, I guess they're not guaranteed, but.
I mean, who knows? You get a shootout or something like that? No, I don't either. I'm not predicting that.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, like, could they lose and the offense plays really well? I guess that could happen, and I could see him keeping the job. But in general, based on what I expect.
I don't know, man.
In the game this weekend?
If they win.
Yeah.
What if they win one of these insane, like, defense? Like, the defense has a day for the ages. They score, maybe special teams.
They win
score.
7-6.
They win 7-6. Brissett turns it over for the first time all year.
He keeps the job. That's what I think.
I wonder if he changes. We also don't know if the plan that we've heard on and off for a month straight. The plan's week five.
You just heard Van Pelt talking about it. He talked about the growth. He talked about the plan. Maybe the plan all along has been week five.
Second home game.
But now you're going to bench a guy. You just beat the Niners. You're 2-2.
Yeah.
And you're playing a winnable game at home, you're going to bench that quarterback?
But you feel like you're making an improvement at that position, maybe.
Like, but you're talking to me and you. The team decided to start Brissett.
Same person in the room, Jones.
I never would have. No, but I'm saying I never would have played Brissett in the first place. I would have played Drake May week one. So that, if you're asking me, of course I put May in. We're talking to them. They started Jacoby Brissett. They wanted to stick with Jacoby Brissett. Jerod Mayo came in last week after the Jets game and said, we're going to have to evaluate. And then he came in the next day and he's like, Jacoby's a starter until further notice. So the organization, on that list, the organization feels like Brissett is their guy.
We've also learned about just how much activity Drake May has gotten in practice, which is not like most backups around the league.
True.
And so I'm holding out hope for week five being the plan, and therefore you're getting this guy ready. You're like, all right, we don't think he's ready right away, but we're not going to sit him all year. So then when do you bring him in? You're not going to wait for the bye week because it's such a late bye week this year. We thought, all right, you have the mini bye week because of the Thursday game, but they might have said, no, not in San Francisco. Nick Bosa versus our fourth left tackle, maybe not the best time to start his first game. But against Miami, sort of a banged up Miami team at home, plus we give that big shot in the arm to all the fans that, hey, second home game, I know we're 1-3, or even 2-2. Not like 2-2 is a great record.
No.
We're going to bring in Drake May and sort of spark everything. I would hold out a little bit of hope, even in a win, if Brissett falls apart, which, again, you're really threading a needle there. Like, how bad can a quarterback play and you still win against a team that is a lot more talented than you? But yeah, just any kind of loss, I feel like, is certainly pointing in the right direction.
So you can jump in on this. All your thoughts on Patriots and Niners this weekend. Do you give the Patriots any shot? Is this a final stand for Jacoby Brissett? 617-779-7937. We have the week in review coming your way about 15 minutes from now at 12:45 every Friday on Jones and Keefe. We have Keefe's Keys. You want the full breakdown, insight.
Oh, boy, do we have keys today.
On Patriots and Niners. That comes your way at 1 o'clock sharp.
Yes.
So mark that down. Reminder, NFL Talk on WEEI brought to you by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com. You can get a great deal on the iPhone 16 Pro. You give the Patriots any shot this weekend?
I don't.
No?
I don't. No, I know there's that's upsets all the time. To win the game.
Yeah.
To win, score more points than the other team.
Yeah,
I don't.
Feel good about it.
I kind of feel similar as I did in the Jets. Maybe they had a better chance against the Jets, but the New York had struggled early. Rodgers had struggled early. And you're like, I think they're going to snap out of it. And then they more than snapped out of it against the Patriots. I feel similar to San Francisco. They've lost back-to-back games. A team that a lot of people pick to be back in the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl. They win their first game against the Jets. Then they lose two in a row, including a game which they should have won. Like, they had that game won in the fourth quarter. They lose to the Rams. So they got to be steaming after back-to-back losses. I think this is one of those ones where they take it out on their next opponent, which happens to be the Patriots. They're not quite as banged up as they looked like they might be on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah, I don't know that Debo or Kittle are playing, but they were both at practice yesterday.
And
so
even Trent Williams was like an illness earlier in the week, so like I think he's fine.
Purdy had a sore shoulder. I thought on Monday there's a chance none of those guys would play. I think pretty much everybody but McCaffrey is playing.
And they've played all season without McCaffrey, and Jordan Mason's been pretty good. So it's not like, hey, this is the first game, what are they going to do? Like, no, they've been just fine. The idea of a fourth left tackle starting in four games is not ideal.
No.
Nobody's really emerged from any of the skill position guys outside of Ramondre's first two games, but then he went back in the shell. So I don't know what Alex Van Pelt's game plan is going to be going into this one. He seemed to not really – they went away from the run last week. Like, does he yo-yo it? Meaning, after week two, we were like, oh, my God, maybe mix in a receiver. But then he went overboard mixing in the receiver that they forgot to run. So does now he forget the receivers again and like only run? Like, we'll see.
I don't really know what you do against this team in terms of how you attack them. And I don't think the Jets ran very well week one. But like, Kyren Williams was a monster last week. And you can say Kyren Williams is a better back than Ramondre. You're probably right.
I don't know. I mean, that was pretty close.
Kyren Williams ran for 89 yards. He had another touchdown through the air in that game.
And he did a flip into the end zone.
He did a very cool forward flip. The Vikings, no one individually ran great, or at least Aaron Jones individually didn't run great in that game in week two. But they ran for, as a team, 146 yards. Ty Chandler had 10 carries for 82. The Jets ran, again, not well week one against the Niners. They ran for a total of 68 yards on 19 carries. They were behind, so game script dictated some of that. I think it's at least neutral. Are you going to throw on the Niners? Are you gonna have time to throw against the Niners with this offensive line? I think you probably go back, to answer your question, to the game plan to start the year, where you hand it to Ramondre a million times, and you don't worry about throwing until you're behind on the scoreboard. That's probably what you do.
Also concerning is this last game the Patriots played, they were bad at everything, but they all of a sudden couldn't tackle. Like, they were a great tackling team against Cincinnati. You remove Juwan Bentley, but pretty much everybody else is still there, and they can't tackle.
They were mostly fine against Seattle.
Yeah, but it was like, all right, not as sharp, it was like, all right, still a weakness.
Still good.
And then it was crazy bad against the Jets. And so if Debo and Kittle play, and then like Brandon Ayuk, who's gotten off to a slow start, we talked about earlier in the week, but those are three guys that aren't exactly easy to take down, but like with one person. Like, the 49ers.
No, right. If you tackle against Debo like you tackled against the Jets, he's going to have three 80-yard touchdowns.
That's insane. Because those guys dish out more punishment than they get on offense. They're kind of a fun team to watch in that sense. But, yeah, that's something that needs to get cleaned up, and we'll see.
So we are giving the Patriots no chance against the Niners. How about to cover? Would you take them to cover?
I mean, 10 points is a lot, but I would say no. Any kind of potential score I would throw out there would be 14, 17, something like that.
The only reason I would take the Patriots to cover has nothing to do with the matchup. It's just the way games have gone in the league so far this year, where you say all these giant underdogs, a lot of them are winning straight up, never mind covering the spread. So that's the only reason I would lean the Patriots, but there's nothing in the matchup that tells me to do it. And it's why I do think it's the last stand for Jacoby Brissett. I think he's done. I think week five will be the time we see Drake May. And I think then you'll get energy, interest around this team. And that is a factor. We can say it shouldn't be and debate whether or not it should be. But Jaden Daniels playing well. We talked about this on Tuesday, the day after Jaden Daniels lit it up on Monday Night Football. The way he's performing, the way that I feel like most fans are approaching this game, which is like you and I, Keith, they have no shot. They're not even going to cover. Bunch of texts right now, 37937. Guys, they're tanking. They're going to lose by double digits. May's going to start week five.
They're not tanking.
I don't think they're tanking either, but I'm just telling you this is how certain fans feel.
If they're tanking, they're doing a pretty bad job.
Are most people turning on
beat Cincinnati?
Are most people turning on the game at 4 o'clock, whatever it is, 4:15 on Sunday?
4:05.
Are most people turning the game on going, boy, I can't wait to watch this game. This team has a shot. I don't feel that way at all.
And unlikely.
So there is a factor, whether it's the right one or the wrong one, with ownership. Watching what's going on in Washington with Jaden Daniels and the interest there. Watching what's going on with the team and the lack of interest coming off a beatdown on Thursday Night Football. And that's another piece looming over all of it. If they look like a dead-ass team and they get smoked and they throw for 100 yards and Jacoby Brissett gets sacked 2 seconds after every snap, they're going to make a switch. So I do think it's the last stand for Jacoby Brissett this weekend. I do think it's Drake May time next week, but unfortunately, that means one more week of Jacoby Brissett and this offense where they cannot throw the football. Like, we all think Daniel Jones is terrible, right?
Yeah, I think he's one of the worst.
He threw 41 times last night for 281 yards.
And he's got Malik Nabis.
He has better weapons, but, like, I don't think he's very good.
No.
And
but Giants line's really good.
He makes
is it?
Wandale Robinson look like a functional player.
Yeah.
Like, he threw him 14 times last night.
No, I mean, like, enough is enough, like, with the Jacoby Brissett stuff. You and I felt this way going into the season.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is going to be a long year. This is even going to be a long few weeks if you're just trotting this guy out each time. And then he kind of, you know, they win an ugly, low-scoring game week one, and it sort of delayed things a little bit. But they've only lost twice, and you can already see the heat just go flying up.
It's true.
On getting him out of there.
It's true. So let's get to this week's matchup.
Yes.
Which features, to me, Brandon Ayuk. Do you give him the Christian Gonzalez treatment this week? I'm interested in Ayuk because the Patriots were ready to throw the bag at him in the offseason. They were going to do it if they could get the Niners to agree to a trade. Do you give him the Christian Gonzalez treatment?
I would. Yeah, I mean, well, let's see if Debo plays. But even if Debo plays, I guess he might be a little bit limited. It's a no-brainer, I think, if Debo's out, that I would just put Gonzalez on him. And I would do more of it, too. Because how many times has everybody said at the end of the game, oh, Gonzalez's numbers versus receiver X, like the guy's got 2 catches for 9 yards. But then that same guy has like 89, 109 yards. And you're like, well, just keep him on him more often.
Right.
And I know it's like a, you know, game of chess and you can't run the exact same coverage every single time, but it seems like the teams have been able to capitalize when Gonzo's not one-on-one with Chase or Wilson or obviously Metcalf. So yeah, I would put it on Ayuk. I also wouldn't be surprised if this is a breakout game for Ayuk. It's been 3 slow starts. Yeah, I think Brandon Ayuk, I didn't put him in the touchdown parlay, but it wouldn't shock me. He's been targeted a decent amount.
Yeah, he had 10, 11 touchdowns.
Hasn't done much
like
with it. He had a drop touchdown, or 2 drop touchdowns, I think.
He had a drop touchdown week one for sure, yeah.
So I think this is about that time. It's week four. He, you know, was a holdout contract guy during the preseason. Maybe he just needed to get going a little bit. CeeDee Lamb, good example. Also, slow start for him. Like, for most receivers, it was a good first 3 weeks. But for him, it was a slow start. Last night, what, 98 yards and a touchdown? It was week four. So maybe everything is sort of caught back up. The rust has been knocked off. So I think Ayuk, especially if they don't just put Gonzalez on him, I think Ayuk could have a big game.
Okay. That is the Verizon matchup brought to you by Verizon, the official 5G network of the Patriots. I'm with you. Like, I would like to see the Patriots do what Denver's doing. And I'm not telling you Christian Gonzalez is Patrick Sertan, but he's trailing receivers all over the field.
Yeah.
He shut down Debo week one. He shut down, who was it, week two? And it was Mike Evans last week. Like, he has
been pretty good.
And that they're not even a good team. But
no.
Their defense is, you know, playing well. They just shut down Baker Mayfield in Tampa, who was 2-0 last week, because he erases wide receivers. And I'd like to find out if Gonzalez can be that guy. So to me, yeah, follow around Ayuk. You don't need to do it 100% of the time, but have him trailing guys, have him find that number one wide receiver and take him away. Because I don't really love the rest of the Patriots cornerback group for sure. And even their secondary, I think, is a little overrated in the passing game. You know, you want Kyle Duggar coming up and smacking a running back in a wide receiver screen or coming towards the line of scrimmage. You don't want him going back from it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want him deep in the passing game. So that's what I would focus on here. And I am curious to see what Brandon Ayuk does against the Patriots and how, and you brought this up earlier in the week, how much motivation there is for the Patriots to just take him away and say, nope,
mm-hmm.
this guy's not going to light us up. We're not going to make that happen. We're going to take him out of the game. Can you do that? Can Gonzalez do it? Interesting subplot to this weekend's game against San Francisco. You like Shanahan on the other side. You mentioned earlier today.
That's well, I do and I don't.
That's right? the guy you would take off their team.
Yeah, I think he's currently what Andy Reid was before he got Patrick Mahomes, which was really good coach, can get really good offenses, but still kind of chokes and kind of, you know, there's questionable things with him, whether it was as a coordinator or as a coach, and but a pretty high floor, right? I mean, Andy Reid was going to conference championship games with Donovan McNabb for four straight years, but he was also kind of a joke too. Like, how can you be both a good coach and also a joke? But that was Andy Reid for a while.
Yeah.
We always made fun of him until he started to win, and then he wins again. Then he went, and you're like, oh, okay, he actually, wait a minute, he might be the best coach ever. Like it started to take a turn. Like, right. That's how good Andy Reid has become. I think Shanahan is very similar to that. I mean, four conference championship games in the last 5 years, and he's done it with Jimmy Garoppolo and Brock Purdy. I'm not a Brock Purdy guy, so some might argue that the other way. Like, well, he's actually pretty good. I don't think he's that good. I think that's more Shanahan, and yet, one of the reasons why they haven't broken through yet is also because of Shanahan. So it's very bizarre, but I think Reid is a great example for him to be like, you can break through and then you can win multiple titles after a bunch of losses. Not like this is going to break you. You know, Sean McVay is another one where we used to look at him when Sean McVay lost to the Patriots, there was a lot of that, man, he was really happy to be there, and he was just like sucking up to Belichick like
way,
a child.
Way too happy to see Bill Belichick.
And you're like, yeah. Oh my God, this guy is just in over his head. It's 3 years later, they win the Super Bowl. So I think Shanahan's a really, really good coach, but I also get why everyone's like, oh, he's a choke artist. I'm like, yeah, it's both.
I just want to see, too, like, I said this earlier, bad vibes around the team. The Ayuk situation was weird this offseason. They've gotten off to a bad start. They've lost to Sam Darnold. You know, they've,
you know,
lost,
funny, they've lost to Kevin O'Connell and they lost to Sean McVay.
Yeah.
Which I also good find point. Funny. Usually he beats McVay.
They dominate, yeah. McVay. And that was a banged up Rams team, the Ramulans. So I just want to see how he's dealing with all of this. I always keep an eye on the 49ers again in my household. But like, yeah, to actually sit down against the Patriots and watch it, I think they're going to smoke them. But if they don't, if it's a close game or heaven forbid the Patriots win it, they're 1-3. I wonder if the Shanahan seat gets a little hot.
I mean, it should, like, because their expectations are always so high, right? Yeah. Like, you usually don't give Coach of the Year to a guy that is expected to be in the Super Bowl, right? Like, Bill probably won it twice. Yeah. Like, it's not really a thing that you get.
And we were talking about McCarthy last night. Like, McCarthy lost that game last night to the Giants. It was closer than he'd like it to be. They have two more tough games and then the bye week. Like, I'm not saying they'd fire Shanahan in season, but I wonder if you start to get the squawking there in San
but
Fran.
But do you put him, like, top five coach currently?
I mean, probably, I guess. I mean, he's a phenomenal scheme.
Yeah.
But
I'll take that. Like, if you're like an offensive genius and you're the head coach, like, okay, in this league, that works.
Yeah.
Like, I'll take it.
But if you can't get over the hump, you wonder if teams get a little restless.
Yeah.
So I want to keep an eye on that this week. Fortunately for him, fortunately for the 49ers, I don't think the Patriots are going to give him much pushback.
No.
You can jump in 617-779-7937. All your thoughts on Pats and Niners. Keefe's Keys at 1 o'clock, Grab Bag at 1:20, and the Week in Review next. This is an homage to the Bozo Touchdown Parlay. Is that what this is?
Is that right?
We're getting Travis Kelce in there?
Yeah. Yeah, we are. I don't love it, but listen, it hit last week, so I'll play it again.
Heat check by Terp in the Bozo Touchdown
Parlay. He's due.
The man is due. We'll get to your phone calls here on Jones and Keefe. It's Patriots Friday, 617-779-7937. We're going to move the Week in Review to later on in the program. Keefe's Keys at 1 o'clock. Grab Bag at 1:20, so maybe 1:45-ish, because right now joining us on a Patriots Friday is Patriots Special Teams Coordinator Jeremy Springer, and the coordinators on Patriots Friday are brought to you by Rate. Visit Chant, ShantWeei.com to learn more. Jeremy Springer, how are we doing this week?
Man, I'm doing great. How about yourself, brother?
We're doing well. We've been watching all season long, as many football fans have been, the dynamic kick. Your thoughts 3 weeks in, I know it's early, on the dynamic kickoff and some of the returns here early on in the 2024 season?
You know, early on, I thought we would see a lot more. And as we went through training camp, a lot of the rules were actually changed in training camp. Yeah, we were practicing a bunch of stuff in OTAs. Training camp had changed a bunch of those rules. And I think because of the rules and what you can do with the ball, it's a lot more simpler than what people thought it were. Like, simple returns, simple schemes. The where you kind of make your money at is what I'm starting to notice is how can you kick the ball and place it in different areas? How can you personnel a couple of people to move them around, like chess pieces? and then hit. But you also, because it's such a short distance now, you really only have one line of defense. And because of that, you don't always want to cover every rep, because you can be good on two or three, but then on that fourth or fifth one, like you saw in the Commanders game Monday night, you pop one for 67 yards because you're covering every single rep. And all it takes is a couple guys get out of their lane and that thing is gone, or it's a 60, 80-yard return. So I think that's what's pulling guys away a little bit from actually trying to return more. And again, like I said, it's a lot more simpler than I thought it would be.
Do you think this is here to stay? Because I feel like the league was hoping for a lot more kick return opportunities, but you guys certainly aren't alone in, you know, blasting it through the end zone more often than not.
It's going to be interesting. I think I will know more in the middle of the season, but also with the way the rules are with the touchback, you know, as games get colder and get later in the season, you're going to see a lot more returns because of it. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out later in the season when games are truly now – teams are fine for the playoffs and things like that. And now that true field position is really, really taken into account. I don't know. You know, it's going to be interesting. If this is a one-year deal. And I think so far, if I would have to choose, it might not. But, you know, I think you just got to wait till a few more weeks and once the weather changes.
So I hear what you're saying about the downside of Eckler taking back a long kick return. I think DJ Dallas had one early on in the year as well for Arizona that he brought back for a touchdown. But why haven't you guys looked at it the other way and said, let's try to gain an advantage instead of just handing the opponent an opportunity at the 30? Why not try to exploit that more than maybe other teams have?
And I think because you want to see a little bit more around the league and kind of get feel for the game plan wise. I think when you're kind of unsure and if you have a little bit of momentum in the game, you don't want to lose that momentum. And that's kind of, I think, where we're at right now. And I know we want to cover more. We want to do a little bit more as we progress here. And it's more about just trying to figure it out and make sure we have a solid plan. If it's a plan where we don't quite feel sure about it, we need to see more film around the league, that can always help us as well. I think that's kind of the approach we've kind of taken as of right now. And then also, you know, make sure our kicker can do a little more with the kicks. Because, again, I think that's the most important thing. Can he move it around and switch it around? Because when you're doing that, it makes it a lot harder to get off a turn team to actually scheme you up. If you're putting it in one place every time, that's an easy scheme up for a team over time.
I know Matthew Slater joined the staff, and I think his title is assistant to the head coach, but I'm curious, how much has he helped out with you in the special teams?
I mean, he's phenomenal. Just his insight and whatever I need from him, because he's pulled in so many directions. He's such a guy that's so well-respected that, you know, Coach Mayo is using him a lot, and everyone on the building is using him for everything, and he helps with our leadership council. So for me, I'm not like – he's not going to be in my room game planning all day and things like that, but what he does do is he's always on the field helping me out. He's always giving me insight on little things I might have forgotten to mean to mention or a little technique that I'm teaching. Like, he comes in and says, hey, man, I've done like that before. It doesn't work like that. So, all right, well, how do you think we should teach this later? So, and even in game days on the sideline, he's phenomenal. So having a guy like that, as long as with the rest of my crew, I got, you know, Tom Quinn's my assistant, Colby Tippett. I mean, I got a phenomenal crew of guys that just do a really good job and help me keep me honest. And it's been really good.
We're talking to Patriots special teams coordinator Jeremy Springer here on a Patriots Friday on Jones and Keefe, WEEI. I was reading up on you today, Jeremy. You're a very, very good high school quarterback in Texas. You played defense.
Yeah,
you played defense nice. In college.
Nice.
But what it's always interesting to me or fascinating to me growing up here in the Northeast, the high school football in Texas. What is there anything you miss about that atmosphere, just being around that atmosphere, the Friday night lights in a state like Texas versus, you know, here?
I say this all the time because I coached college for almost 11 years. And so I recruited the state of Texas heavily. And also, like you just said, I played there. What's so profound about the state of Texas and football is the resources. They provide a lot of resources to those kids, and so the coaches are higher paid, so you get a lot more output. And what I mean by that is these kids are not only learning football in the state of Texas, they're learning about life, learning how to play as a team, work through adversity, and those are things that I learned playing high school football in Texas. And on top of that, people care. I grew up in a small town near South Padre Island, Texas, deep south Texas, and everyone still to this day in that town is lives for Friday nights. Lives for Friday nights, lives for those guys. And to this day, they still hit me up. They still remember my name. Like, families that watched me, you know, 15 years ago now. It's crazy. And it was such a treat to play in the state of Texas, to coach in the state of Texas. and I still, my heart's in the state of Texas, it always will be. But it's definitely something that I lived through, and I preach them, you know, try to preach to my guys as I coach them about, you know, fighting through things and how much football can teach you about life.
Did you watch the Friday Night Lights TV show?
Hell yeah. I watched it. The movie I've seen about a million times. But yeah.
I love it so much. Tim Riggins would be one of the great athletes of all time if he just kept his head on straight.
All time, dog. No doubt.
I'll tell you, I was 42 touchdowns or something like that in Texas high school football is no joke.
Great.
I hesitate.
Hey,
oh yeah,
hey,
go.
It's the only thing I like to brag about. It's still sick because I wasn't a very good collegiate quarterback or anything like that. I moved to linebacker, but I always tell guys when they're trying to tell me I'm not a good athlete, I'm like, I had 42 touchdowns, I had 15 touchdowns rushing. You know, I had a pretty good season right there in 5A. We lost to Nick Foles, Austin Westlake. Justin Tucker was the safety, picked me off twice. Like, we had some pretty good teams going against us there in 5A in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, look, I threw for 42 touchdowns. I would never shut up about it. I can tell you that right now. I shudder to even ask this question based on our experience earlier today, but we do a four-pack of questions about the Patriots game every week. Did you have a favorite 49er or a player you liked to watch growing up? I know you're in Texas, so I don't know how well-liked the 49ers were, especially in Dallas territory. Was there anybody you liked or respected on the other side?
Oh man, you know I was a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan growing up. So for even to say that, but growing up, I loved Jerry Rice, and then after him was Terrell Owens. I enjoyed watching those guys play. It was a lot of fun. You know, every time we played those guys early in my life, it was fun to watch.
Pretty good. Yeah, T.O. was ours as well.
Yeah, we both checked off T.O.
You said what?
We both had the same answer. Terrell Owens was a good answer there. Yeah, I can understand not liking him on the Dallas, although he's eventually a Cowboy.
Right.
So I can understand respecting that.
But I'll never forget him standing on the star. And then I think it was Rod Nichols at the star, which is great. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
That was great.
All right. Well, best of luck on Sunday. I know you guys are taking off soon to head out to the West Coast, Patriots and Niners. He's special teams coordinator Jeremy Springer. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day, okay?
Thanks,
right,
Jeremy.
We will. We will indeed. Oh, how about that? An answer to that question.
Did we just become best friends?
I think so. I'm a fan.
He liked Friday. You asked him about a television
Friday
program.
Friday Night Lights. He watched it. Loved it. Watched the movie as well. So the movie is based off the book, which is a true story. The TV show is a fictional version of that, but it's unbelievable. It's one of the 10 best shows of all time.
Based on Jeremy Springer, I think, is what it was.
Could have been. Yeah.
42 touchdowns.
Not bad.
He like ran for a bunch more.
Slinging around. Yeah.
How about that?
I like it.
He's like, hey, I bring that up from time to time. Oh, you do? You threw for 42 one year. The Patriots have thrown for, let me check.
Nah, it's going to be a while.
They've thrown for one. I wouldn't shut up about it.
I do like the stories about like who played who in high school back in the day.
Did you say Justin Tucker picked him off? Is that what I heard?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was confused about that.
But
Nick Foles on the other side.
So before I could even ask it, he was like, yeah, Nick Foles on the other side. Because like Texas high school quarterbacks, there was a great article written, I forget where, a couple of years ago about guys like Patrick Mahomes and Kyler Murray and I want to say Drew Brees. It was loaded, like how insane the stats were for some of these Texas high school legends. It was pretty
Justin
sweet.
Justin Tucker played wide receiver, safety, and kicked for Westlake.
Justin Tucker, there you go.
So it is Justin Tucker.
Yeah, I thought I misheard
Hall of Fame
it, to be
kicker.
Honest. Yeah. I mean, can't
buy an athlete, clearly.
Can't buy a field goal this year.
No.
Should ask him about that.